Kim started out by purchasing a practice in Seattle. She did not start from scratch. She bought a practice and had some. We set some goals, and she and one of the things that I did is I suggested that to reach these goals, that she look around and buy some practice. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you did that and what you
Sure.
looked for in those practices?
Sure. We were fortunate to be in an area where the practitioners were of retirement age. And I first started out dental school and purchased a very small practice, earned my stripes. 2 years later, I had an opportunity to purchase another practice. And so what I did is I purchased that practice and moved to the seller's location and stayed there for 7 years. We had phenomenal growth, and another opportunity came up a few years later. Well, let's see, I was there for 7 years. So after the seven-year mark in the second location, a third opportunity arose. And once again, I went to Bill and said, Bill, I want to experience more growth. And so we looked again at another acquisition and another merger. And so I purchased that, moved to the seller's location, because when you move, you've already established a level of trust and rapport with your established clientele, and they'll go with you. And in our particular case, when we had undertaken the mergers, the acquisitions and the mergers, all the practices that were bought were within a mile. So that was kind of planned out. And so it was just a matter of letting the brokers know, okay, Kim Okamura is serious about paying a fair price for a seller's practice. And so as a result of merging all these practices together, we got a patient base, which were the baby boomers. And so as a result, we've continued to grow.
Yeah. One of the things that we've done in a number of practices is I do encourage mergers anytime we can. They've been very popular in the corporate world, of course, for two reasons. One is they're very profitable. And secondly, of course, is you buy market share. And we've done this over and over. As a matter of fact, if you read several of the chapters in the book, Chris Mueller in Port Orchard, Washington, third year out of dental school, last year his net, and these numbers are in the book, you can read it, but his net was $600,000. And that was either his second or third year out, and part of that was due to a merger, and he had no idea how he was going to do this. And I said, well, you buy the practice, and I'll help you do it. Same thing with Tom DeLopez tomorrow morning. Literally doubled his practice, and he is in his mid-50s, and had no idea how he would do this much dentistry. And I said, well, I know how to do that. You get the practice, and we'll deal with it. It's kind of the same thing with Kim, and what she just mentioned was one of my strategies was that let's move our current practice to the seller's practice because those people are used to going to that location. Our patients will follow us, and so that's something we tried with Kim. Kim, now you do some marketing now as well to drive your practice. What are some of the current marketing things that you're doing?
We're presently doing mostly visuals right now. Print ads, which is in a lifestyle magazine here in the Seattle area, and we've been had a relationship with them for probably, I'm going to say, at least 4 years. It's been very successful for us.
Mm-hmm.
We are just starting a campaign with a radio station here, and it started radio play approximately 2 days ago, of which we've already gotten 5 phone calls of some potentially serious buyers of our services. So as time has gone on, with and Bill teaches us also about branding, and Michael might be able to comment on this as well, is that through when a person has their own vision and they're a little bit more clear about it, then the type of marketing or the ads that they put out to the potential buying public reflects that vision. And it may be just very subtle, but the potential buyer picks up on that, and that, in a sense, differentiates your print ad from another print ad. And as Bill had commented, there's a lot of people up in this area that provide cosmetic services. So
and they're in the same magazine.
They're in the same magazine. Exactly.
One of the things that we see that we think is real important that I think Kim has done an excellent job of, and that is before you start marketing, you really have to set the direction of the practice, and you have to create this brand. What I see so many doctors doing is they use a shotgun for their marketing. They go out and they say, oh, I'll try radio for 3 months. I'll try newspaper. I'll try magazines. They try various things, but there's no consistency. But it's not just the look and feel. There's just no real direction to it. 1 month they're advertising discounted something. The next month they're advertising high-end, and they're all over the chart. What have you done, Kim, to avoid that? I mean, I know you've been working with a marketing firm. We have Michael Elliott from Rocket Dog Dental on the call tonight. Michael is one of my sponsors, as working with a number of our clients. Kim, what comes first? I guess, and what I'm asking is, I'll answer the question myself because I want the answer to be, you have to decide where the vision is and where you're going before you start marketing.
Exactly.
And I find so many people, they want to market for the reason, well, I want more new patients. Well, what do you want? I want as many as I can get. Well, then you do a low pass over the city with an airplane and throw out flyers for free dentistry.
Right. With marketing, there's some science to it, and there's art to it. You know, it's one of those, if you're going to be involved in it, you have to be very patient. And for me personally, I am very comfortable with taking risks. So the form of branding that we've done for ourselves, as I mentioned, you just have to be very consistent, very consistent. And it has to be congruent with your own values, which is reflected in the vision.
Well, Kim, I noticed in numbers that I've received from you that your fees are high. Your fees are not, you're not trying to attract low-end patients.
No.
You're certainly not doing it on discount dentistry.
No, I'm not.
I mean, Kim's fees are somewhere, if I remember correctly, about $1,500 a unit, and I think her veneers are up or closer to $2,000.
Yes.
That's still...
Mm-hmm.
And so in your marketing, what would you describe as the... How do you market that, Kim?
How do I market the high end?
Yes, I mean, how have you positioned yourself that well? I mean, that's in Seattle. Seattle is a very, the whole town of Seattle is very affluent.
Yes. It's the quality of the photos, it's the quality of the visuals, it's your logo, it's your byline, it's everything. It's the detail, it's the color, it's the placement of your ad, it's the quality of the publication that you're going to be in. And in conjunction with perhaps some other marketing that you're using. So, in fact, we just had a call today from an individual who saw one of our most recent ads and said, and it attracted them to our website. So they find out more information about us. And if you were to see the ad and then go to the website, it's going to be the same quality.
Mm-hmm.
And each step that they take, we offer a little bit more information, and perhaps what we're trying to do is arouse their curiosity so that they pick up the phone and go the next step and hear our voice.
Excellent. Jim, let's talk about team for a moment. Now you've got the vision in place, you have your goals in place. We've talked a little about how you grew that practice, you've told me about your marketing. Tell us a little about how you've selected team and how you evaluate team and what you you mentioned to me earlier you're making some changes right now.
Right.
Kim has
right.
had a very stable staff for a long time, but she's always she's not afraid to make changes when change is necessary.
Oh, heavens. Yeah, and I would like to say that change isn't always easy, but if you think of your practice as an entity in itself, and you have to provide for that practice, and you have to feed that practice. And so what you have to surround yourself with is those individuals that are going to believe in your vision and also feel as if their actions and their behavior is going to continue with the continuous growth of your practice. So what I look for in staff people are... they have to be hungry.
Uh-huh.
They have to want to learn.
Okay, Kim, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about, you say selecting people want to be hungry. Kim, over the years I've worked with you, I've never seen you spend a lot of time trying to talk people into your vision. Could you give
them
some comments on that?
They're either there or they're not.
Mm-hmm. Could you explain that a little bit?
I'm driving the bus, and it's still going forward. And either on the bus or if you're not. I don't, for me, as I said, if we go back to the entity, the practice, my obligation to this practice and these clients is to provide the very best. And it's much more prudent and efficient for me to bring someone on board that has already, believes in me. I can't teach someone to believe in me. They have to be there already.
Uh-huh.
It's a waste of time and energy trying to teach something that a person maybe deep down doesn't believe in for whatever reason.
Kim, you've heard me in seminars say that I subscribe to the Les Schwab or the Nordstrom theory. Most of you know about Nordstrom. Nordstrom is the number one profitable men, women, and children specialty clothing store in the United States. They've copied, but many people try to copy what they do. They're known for quality and service. The average new hired person lasts 4 days at Nordstrom. Another example I use a lot in my seminars is a company called Les Schwab. They're located here in the Northwest. Also, however, they're only in the Northwest, 12 Western states. They have 400 tire stores, 7,000 employees. They are the largest automotive accessory store, mainly tires, brakes, and batteries. But they're the largest in the United States, and the average new hire there lasts 5 days. Kim, could you comment on that, how that applies in a dental practice?
How Les Schwab applies?
Well, Les Schwab and Nordstrom theory.
Let me tell you this little short story. We have a hygienist who's helping us out here. And as Bill had mentioned, our hygienist has recently retired from our practice. So we're in the process of looking for that really special one. So we had a hygienist come in, and we got to talking, and she used to work for Nordstrom.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, tell me this. We know that Nordstrom quality and so forth and the type of team players, employees, tell me about that. What are they looking for? And her response was very succinct. She says what Nordstrom's is looking for, what all of us should be looking for, is people who want to be there and want to see the success of that business grow. And you either have it or you don't.
Interesting. Now, that's what we're looking for in team members. And as Kim knows, and some of you on the call that know me and have heard me in seminars, our daughter worked there for a year, and she found out this was exactly the case. They spend no time trying to talk people into their vision. Either you provide the level of service that is important to them, or you can't work there. And it's not like we're going to find out, and it's not something we can train people to do. It's not something that getting together and discussing feelings
right.
is going to make any difference. It's either you want to be there or you don't. And
it's
see the opportunity in the job.
Right. It's not your job to do that.
Even though you said you're the teacher. I some things you said, Kim, in your story that you allow people to make mistakes and
work
with them. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. I'm a firm believer if you have the individual, first of all, you know, have the individual that wants to be there and who really believes in you. And the other premise that when I look for a person that comes to work is I believe in them. I believe in them as a person. I believe in them that they can contribute to the continual growth of this practice from a psychological standpoint, from a financial standpoint.
And if you don't believe in them, you do what?
I say it's not a good fit. And
you're very good. You don't spend any time. In other words, you're fully enthusiastic about each one of your team members any given time. And
absolutely.
If not, they probably shouldn't be there.
Absolutely. And you know, from experience, Bill, that, I mean, that's a hard decision for me to make, but we had a gentleman who was with me for 7 years. Things changed, and as hard as it was, I had to say goodbye.
Yes.
But in each scenario, because I knew what I wanted for this practice, once again, it goes back to this vision thing. Because I was so clear about my vision, I knew what I wanted. So each time that I make a change, and it hasn't been very frequent, it's always been an individual who is even more qualified.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's one
really
of the things. Kim, talk to us a little bit about systems in place. I mean, you've got a great team, or you're making some changes right now, or some changes are happening. You know, I will say this. Lee is the hygienist who is actually retiring, is a lady that we've actually interviewed in one of these calls. I do a call monthly for my coaching doctors. Of their staff, I usually interview one of the staff members who I think has some outstanding contributions, and Lee is one that did a lot of external marketing for your practice.
Yes.
He was out there networking in a business networking group. She was doing that. I mean, that's...
She took every opportunity to make some semblance of connection.
That's right. I mean, she did... she was unusual, and I interviewed her on that call,
mm-hmm.
but we'll miss her. At the same time, people's lives change and things move on. having a good team in place is critical. You need certain systems in place, and Kim has referred several times to the practice as an entity, and that's really what a system does. It, regardless of the personnel, the practice goes on. I see lots of times in practices where, well, I was talking to a doctor yesterday who called out of the blue, interested in our coaching program, and last year he took a considerable hit, close to $150,000 of gross income. About $100,000 of that was net income to him, and that was because one person left the practice, and in her head were most of the systems in the practice, and no one knew them, and so when she left, it cost him $100,000 of net income. And I think systems prevent that sort of thing. What are some of the systems that you have put in your place in your practice that will go on with or without current personnel to make your practice successful?
Many of the things that you have taught us, Bill, is scheduling. And some of the listeners on the call may have heard you talk about block booking. The scenario about morning meetings is really can set the tone for the practice.
Talk about block booking for a moment.
Block booking is where you do the majority of your production in the morning, 80% of it.
Kim, do you have I'm going to ask you a question here. Do
sure.
you have a dollar goal each morning that the whole team knows about?
$6,000.
But I'll say she knows it. and that goal is every day, and if it's not booked to that, we hold that space open.
Right, every day. And we hit it this morning. Actually, our first client was at 7, and we were done at 8, and we hit our goal.
Oh, that's working quick. No one has time for this call tonight. You have to work during the day. 1 hour, and you're done. These doctors all thought you were making this big sacrifice, but in fact, she was done at 8 o'clock this morning. What are some of the other systems that you've put in place that have eliminated some of the stress in the practice? I mean, one thing I know I've always respected about Kim is she has a good time in her office, and one of the things that I see about making the dental practice fun is to eliminate those things that cause some of the stress. The thing people stress over accounts receivable, people stress over the lack of communication between the front and the back office where everybody fights with that.
Staff meetings are so important that you have really emphasized. So keep the lines of communication. As you mentioned in the chapter of the book, The Teacher, I take the time to sit down with my people and say, okay, what was productive today?
Mm-hmm.
Or if there was a misstep, which is going to happen, if a similar scenario arose, how would you treat that differently? So it's a learning situation.
So in other words, you talk about what went well.
Sure.
It's not just, you don't just wait to communicate till things are wrong. You actually talk about things, hey, that was a great day. What
yeah.
did we do? How did we make that happen?
Yeah, exactly.
So
it just reinforces that behavior. In fact, I was just reading an article in a magazine about how the brain can rewire itself in about, I believe it was 180 days. So if you reinforce that positive behavior, then it becomes much more ingrained into their character.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's a matter of catching it right away, bringing it to their attention, say, hey, I noticed that was great, and allowing the other staff members or team members to hear that compliment as well, because they know that Kim Okamura is looking for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I think it goes back to some old basic rules. If you always want to compliment in public and criticize
exactly.
in private.
And I think the gift that I have is I do that with regularity, plus also in front of the clients.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it, in their eyes, it builds a relationship not only between team members, but between doctor and team member as well.
Well, you know, it brings up a thing that I hear very often from doctors. They say, my team members never compliment my dentistry in front of the patient. And I say to them, well, when's the last time you complimented a team member in front of a patient?
Exactly.
And, what goes around comes around, so
right.
you do real well with that.
You
said something in the book I'd like you to talk about.
Sure.
You allow people to make decisions. As a matter of fact, the conference call this month for our staff members, for all of the team members of all of our offices, is on making decisions and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors allowing teams to make decisions, and even if it's a wrong decision, doesn't turn out well, what did we learn from it, and
right.
what can we do the next time? Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, a lot of practitioners are, well, let me put it this way. As I've grown and evolved, I have found that if I don't micromanage, okay, and if I surround myself with intelligent individuals who can make decisions, it frees me up to concentrate on guiding the practice in the direction that I want it to go, or concentrating on marketing. So I can, how do I want to say, reinforce or have fun with the creatives.
Mm-hmm.
So, and our team members love the independence. But they also know that it's okay, as you had mentioned earlier, it's okay to make a mistake because we'll all learn from that.
Well, now, Kim, you understand, you are talking to doctors, and we've never made mistakes.
So, oh, yes, that is correct.
So we've never made mistakes. And so you see, this is the thing I get all the time is that, of course, we all make mistakes, and it's important not to make the same mistake
more than
a few times.
Oh, sure. But it's really important, like as if you're teaching a child math or any other new skill, you sit down and during their learning process, they are going to make mistakes, but it's excellent opportunities to say, okay, what were you thinking? And, okay, think about this. So they broaden their perspective or their paradigm. So when that same decision-making process arises again, their thought patterns are going to be different.
Yeah, so you really do operate as a teacher. Mm-hmm. Kim, let's talk about overhead just for a moment.
Sure.
I imagine I perked a little bit of interest when I said that Kim has kept her overhead at 50% for years. Kim, what are the important things, and how do you do that? I mean, you know, the national average is close to 75%, and I don't know most of the doctors on the call, but I will have to say that I believe 50% is commendable. We have, over the years, been pretty successful at keeping doctors in that 55% range on overhead. That's pretty common among our clients.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say some of the keys are keeping it at 50%?
Well, first of all, knowing your numbers.
Okay, so you need, now which numbers you need to know, Kim?
Well, what I do on a regular basis, I pull up my P&L.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have QuickBooks, that's really easy to do. So what I look at is my P&L, and I compare it either quarterly to last year,
mm-hmm.
okay, or I'll and so what I'm looking for is percentages. So these percentages, if they're based on what you've taught me or what your coaching program has taught me, is that I want to be within those. So I'm much more, from a business standpoint, acutely aware of what the significance of these numbers are. And if I see a number that's slightly out of whack, I know, okay, from a business standpoint, once again, what the things that you have taught me is, what do I need to look for? What do I need to think about so that I can bring resolution to it, bring it to the attention of the team members who are also looking at these numbers,
mm-hmm.
and we do it at least once a month.
So the team then knows the numbers, and just to throw a comment in here, the number that I look at, what is significance, how does it impact the bottom line, and all of you need, if you're taking notes at all tonight, make a note that says that at practice doing 50% overhead compared to a practice, the national average is 75%, only has to do half as much dentistry to net the same dollar amount, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
That practice, 75% overhead, has to gross twice as much as the practice doing 50% overhead at the same net. And so that's... So which are the numbers, Kim? It sounds like your team, you're pretty open with your team as far as numbers go. What numbers do you share with them, and what?
I show them everything.
So it's a completely open book.
It's a completely open book. So they also understand the decisions that I make is going to be based on my numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I have input from them and whatnot, but ultimately it's my decision, and they know that it's not an emotional decision. It's a financial decision,
mm-hmm.
as to what direction we're going to go in practice-wise, what changes we're going to make if I wanted to in staff, the combination of treatments that we're going to be offering to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers that I specifically look at and then I share with my staff are obviously production and collections.
Mm-hmm.
We have a negative AR. It's because they know the numbers.
You have a negative AR. I was hinting at that a moment ago.
Oh.
I said some of the systems you do to eliminate stress.
Mm-hmm.
We don't
send out statements, and it's very simple. You ask in a very nice way, obviously, and in a sophisticated way. Once again, communication skills that you have taught us has resulted in our clients prepaying before the services are rendered.
Hmm. So, Tim, how long have you done that?
Gollies, I've been with you for 10 years. I'm going to say probably 8.
Uh-huh. And how long ago, how long have you carried, when you talk about the ARs are a minus, that means Kim is carrying a credit balance. That is, people are have already paid for dentistry that she has not delivered yet, and she's not sent a statement out in a number of years. I happen to know these numbers fairly well myself, but I want Kim to tell us, how long has it been that you've had a credit balance?
That I've had a credit balance? I'm going to say off the top of my head, 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Off the top of my head. It's probably more, but I'm just being very conservative.
Now, Kim, you practice in Seattle, Washington. Seattle,
yes.
Washington has 130,000 employees at Boeing Aircraft that all mm-hmm. have Delta dental insurance, which means you have probably 500,000 people, 500,000 or so dependents of Boeing Aircraft people on Delta. How are you able to maintain a credit balance and get paid before you start in a town that's so heavily indoctrinated in Delta? You have the Boeing aircraft, you have
yeah.
the state of Washington, you have the city of Seattle, you have, I can go on and on with
that's
who has
a very
Delta.
Good question.
How do
it's,
you do that?
It's a matter of building value into the services that you're providing to the clients.
Mm-hmm.
We go in with the attitude that insurance is a gift, but it's not a godsend. So we ask a lot of questions of our clients. What do they want from a long-term standpoint? So it's more of a relationship building. And when there's an emotional attachment and a sense of genuine coming from both the practitioner as well from the potential buyer, then insurance, the influence of insurance is diminished.
So that takes a lot of communication skills.
Tremendous amount of communication. And I might add, it's not necessarily talking.
Mm-hmm.
People misinterpret communication as, okay, I'm going to manipulate, I'm going to talk them into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's old school.
We don't do that. It doesn't work. I mean, I don't like being manipulated. Most of you don't like to be manipulated, and that's Neanderthal sales, and yet in dentistry we still seem to
yeah.
have models that are promoting, if I educate them, if I could just teach them, if they just knew what I knew, they would
exactly.
go ahead and do this dentistry. And yet that
yeah.
doesn't work. We still have physicians who smoke, and it's not because they skip pathology class those days. It's because
as you well know, and as if you've advocated it in the past, is that decision-making processes are made in the emotional area of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So what we attempt to do, and quite successfully, I might add, is we listen to what the client wants. And then we go ahead and together decide on the appropriate treatment that will get them to the level of health that they so desire. So it's really taken on a fascinating turn in that most of our clients now, because we have a strong web presence, come to us via the web. It might be driven by print ads and whatnot, and then they go on the web and they correspond with us. And we've had clients who have flown down to from Alaska and said, okay, Kim, I want to have my whole mouth reconstructed. So, I mean, it's nice. But, you know, is that something that you can do overnight? Heavens no. It takes a lot of practice. It takes vision. It takes patience. It takes coaching.
Part of that I shouldn't have interrupted you right there when you mentioned coaching, of course. Bad timing, Bill. One of the things that I see in that positioning that you started out years ago when we started, when in part of the vision and part of creating that practice that is built around value, not built around price.
Exactly.
Part of that is the reason that she can get paid in advance for her treatment. Patients are not visiting her practice because it's a bargain. It is a bargain because it's a tremendous value, and the fees are high, and yet it's good value. And they're willing to pay that, and they're willing to pay in advance. They're not bound by insurance maximums
right.
or that.
Kim,
are you a Delta provider, by the way?
I am not.
Yeah, I didn't think you were.
No, I haven't been for probably about 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh. And that's a very difficult thing to do in a city
very
like
difficult.
Delta or
uh-huh.
some of you from California. We have, of course, clients in pretty much every state that are not providers, but that's not then something that we really promote. It's something that Kim wanted to do. She wanted to be a non-Delta provider when we started to work, and it was a matter of building that value so we could do that. But that's not something that all of our clients do. But I
right.
I think it's something that's fascinating, and I think it's especially fascinating. We did a call recently from one of our doctors in Detroit. A lady was being interviewed. She works administrative area of the practice, and they went from about 100, and I don't remember exactly, I think $150,000 receivable to a credit balance, and they did that in a period of about a year. And during that period of time, they basically grew that practice by about 50%, from about 1.2 to 1.8 million during that period of time. But they completely eliminated statements. They were getting paid in advance of treatment. And the comment that she made is, one of the staff members asked her what the value of that was. Why would she want to do that? And she said, well, that frees her up so she can spend her time with the patients, finding out what they want. And that's how they've raised their production, is selling better treatment.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do, I would like to open this up. If those of you are muted, if you could hit your star six buttons. And I would like to have some of you ask Dr. Okamura some questions. This has been interesting for me. A lot of this, of course, Kim and I talk about this on a regular basis. And some of it I know, some I learned tonight about Kim's practice. What are some of the questions, if you could introduce yourself by name, where you're from, and what questions you might have for Dr. Okamura?
Bill Dome here from Southern California.
Bill, go ahead.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, I'm curious about your website and the gal with the colander.
What do you think?
What's the significance?
That particular campaign was, and we're still running it.
What is the question, Bill? The gal with the what?
With the colander on the top
colander.
Of her head.
The cooking instrument.
Yes. Much of my branding is kind of tongue-in-cheek, and that's what we're kind of known for, is fun. So we seem to attract clients that like to have fun.
Do you still have your picture on the website of you jumping up in the air?
You know, I think we changed that to where I'm twisting around.
Have you seen, in our book, have you seen the picture of Kim jumping, Bill?
Don't recall it.
It's in the book. She's actually jumping up in the air. That was on our website.
Yeah. with regard to your question, Bill, there is no purpose. It's a sense to raise awareness and curiosity. Mm-hmm. And for those clients, I go, oh, what's all that about? And sometimes it draws them a little bit more into the website, and then they call us, and they'll ask us that very same question.
So why a colander?
Why not the
formal view that most dentists put in their website, huh?
Well, it's, as I said, it's part of the branding process. We wanted to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really attracted clients who have asked that question. Well, what's the deal with that? But remember that it was done in conjunction with some other material that we had sent out as well. And we did that. We sponsored a fairly large get together called the Seattle Best of Seattle, which was run by a magazine. And we had a gal there, a model, who had a colander in her hair. On her head, and so there was that connection, that visual connection. It was Kim Okamura, colander on her head, okay, and then it's just repetition. So we're gradually now changing that over. If you go on the website, there is the gal with the daisies.
Yes.
And we have been very successful with that as well. So what's happened is, as time goes on and we make these quirky little changes, people are now looking for that. So it's not so much the colander on the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is Kim Okamura, once again the name. What is she going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
So
great idea.
Always changing things. Good question, Bill. Who's next?
This is J.D. Robinson from Detroit, Michigan.
Yes. Hi, J.D.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for being on the call.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You had mentioned that you were using marketing to rouse the curiosity of potential clients of yours.
Yes.
And I wondered how you took the curiosity that you were rousing into a call to action. We are having a hard time when we're marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, people say, oh, yeah, you know, I saw your ad or I saw your commercial on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely causes zero action on their part. So how do you orient yourself in a way that causes action on theirs?
Well, how we've done it, and that's an excellent question, because obviously you want an ROI or return on your investment. And we shoot for three times as much, and we've been pretty successful with that. The key for us has been driving it to the website. And it tells a little bit about us, and then on your website, you may want to look, do you have a place where they can correspond with you? So we want to make the, we just had a gal who was on our website, and she said it was very inviting. So you may want to perhaps review your website. Does it invite them in?
Who did your website?
Pardon me?
Who did your website?
You know, I'll have to get that information for you. It's a gentleman in the Seattle area.
Okay.
But if you'd like, if you can fire off your email to me, I can get that to you.
Now or later?
I can probably do it by tomorrow.
No, I'm talking about my email.
Oh, yeah, fire off your email now.
Sure, it's JDR.
JD, capital R?
No, just JDR.
Uh-huh.
At Robison.
Could you repeat that once again, please?
Robison. Robison.
Dentalgroup.com.
I have the website.
Oh, great. Okay.
To you.
Got it. Okay.
Very good. Who's next? Has questions for Kim.
Robert Pierce.
Hi.
Hey, Kim. How you doing? What made you decide as your coach?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Everyone, you know, there's consultants and there's coaches out there. Consultants that I find, six things. I wanted more than that. Coaching digs a little bit deeper. I wanted a bigger picture. And what the difference was that Bill will sit down with you and ask you some questions. What do you want out of life? And then he will help you build your practice around that. It's not the other way around.
Well, that's because Bill doesn't have answers.
Oh, is that why?
Bill has questions, and that's been my premise for 20 years in this business, is that anyone who thinks they know how to run someone else's business or how to run someone else's practice is mistaken. All I have are questions to find out how Dr. Okamura wants her practice to be, because what's successful for her may not be successful for someone else,
right,
and vice versa. And no one knows the answers better than Dr. Okamura.
But that's what's so unique about Bill, at least I can only speak with regard to my relationship with him that's been going on for 10 years, and it is, I will tell you, when we first came on board, my husband was just adamantly against it. And
now, why was that, Kim?
Well, he's a bottom line guy. You know Tim. It's got to be the bottom line. What's the numbers? And there was
Tim is the businessman I mentioned earlier in the introduction. He owned two 7-Elevens when he came in. I do remember that first meeting.
At one point, we had three, and then he's sold two. Now he is in real estate. So.
And he really put me on the spot, and he kind of wanted to pull the MBA routine on me with credentials, and it's been interesting. Tim is one of my big fans now, but at that time it was, what are the credentials? What is it you're going to teach us that we don't already know? And I remember the answer I gave him. I said, I'm probably not going to tell you anything you don't already know. in helping answer that question, I find that so many people, so many dentists, are hoping that if they can find that one last answer, if I can go to one more seminar, read one more article, everything will work.
It's much more than that. It really, really is. In order for you to enjoy long-lasting success and durability, it takes more than just fixing the leaks. And Tim is an avowed fan now, that it's the best business decision, bar none, that we've made.
It's that important thing of the, can you hear me now?
I can make it out.
Okay. It's that important thing that you ask that question of your staff continually, do you want to be here? And a lot of dentists think, all I have to do is go to this one more course and get my staff trained and I'm through.
No.
But it's a continual process of training your staff and training the doctor. And it never stops.
Yeah.
And when you realize that, your business doesn't flatline, it keeps growing.
Right.
And that's what you've done.
Yeah, very good. Who else? Who else has a question for Kim?
Dr. Bolton, this is David Curry. One of the doctors that we have on the line tonight was very interested in how to improve the net. And Kim briefly spoke about it. Could you address how critically important it is to go profit margin of 70% to 50%, how much that increases the workload, how much more dangerous it is to work in that environment than having a lesser work hour with...
Things are breaking up a little bit. Dave, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
David's question, he has a doctor on the phone that wants to know about overhead.
Sure.
And how to go from that 75% to 50. I don't know if you can hear Kim. One of the questions answers I have is there's only about three places to look in a profit and loss statement that matter. One is staff is too high.
Right.
Kim, what do you operate your staff percentage at?
We're at 19.1.
19. She knows her numbers, this lady. 19.1% for staff. Does that include hygienists as well?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. And does it also include all payroll cost?
If I were to add payroll costs, add another 1.7% on that.
Okay, so we're still at about 21% for staff. The other area I see is lab is too low. The national, and by the way, for staff, the national average is around 30%, and we operate, all of our clients are at 20% or under, and our high-end practices that are doing strictly cosmetics and large restorative cases are about 14 to 15%. And so there's 10% right there, David, that is money that's left on the table by the doctor who's at 30% staff. The other one is lab. Lab is too low, and that's because we're not selling enough Crown and Bridge. The third area is there's no money spent on marketing.
Right. You know, the first decision that you have to make also is that you want it. You have
to
make a decision that I want to, okay, I'm going to go from 70% to whatever, 65%, and then you have to make that decision.
Yes. Overhead's a choice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Overhead is really a choice.
What else do you have for Kim? We're getting some interference in the background.
I've got another question here, Bill Dome again.
Yes,
Bill.
Go ahead.
After you've been in practice for a while, presuming you are doing hygiene, you're carrying a lot of people along your practice who've been restored, who are in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you find that eventually overloads your system and you're not doing very much with that portion of your practice?
You mean from a hygiene standpoint or?
From a restorative
Well, you have to think of it that the hygiene portion, one of the things that I really look at is our new patient flow. And
so the money is really, the income comes from the new patients, not
right.
The top part.
It's not
Bill's
from the
question,
hygiene.
I'm going to make a request. Everybody except Bill Dome, Kim, and myself, hit the *6 on your phone.
So to answer your question, Bill, new patient flow for us is really key. Very, very key. And if I don't have new patients, then the potential to present treatment drops significantly. So
sure.
That's the marketing.
Bill, if I could add to that, I have a philosophy that's different than a lot of people in my field, is that I don't place as big a value on the recall program in the hygiene department as most doctors do.
Right.
I think that most practices, and this is a quote that if you quote me on it, I'll deny it, in public. Most practices are over-hygiened. And I've done the numbers on hygiene. I've done the numbers. I'm like Kim. I know the numbers in the practices I work with, and I've analyzed these practices. And it costs just as much to see a hygiene patient as it does to see an operative or a Crown Bridge patient once you take out the lab bill. And that's on a cost per hour.
Mm-hmm.
And when I work out the cost per hour, and I've done this on literally hundreds of dental practices and hygiene portions of that, most hygiene departments run in the red on a daily basis. Most hygiene overhead is much higher than what we're charging in hygiene, and that's due to several things. One is their fees are too low for what we're doing, and insurance companies have really enforced the low fees in hygiene. And so what we have is we have people out there trying to promote the idea that let's expand the hygiene department, and I've said for years, why would I want to expand the part of my practice that doesn't make any money?
Right.
Well, that's why I would ask, is it possible to spin off the hygiene department and have them go to somewhere else?
Well, it's interesting. We have hygienists who want to become independent, but once they learn the economics of it, they don't want to do that any longer. But one of the things that I find is that most practices spend an awful lot of effort trying to keep people in the hygiene department that don't want to be there.
Yeah.
And we actually don't spend as much energy on that, and some of these people actually kind of disappear on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to be there anymore. And another thing is when Kim starts charging day of service, some hygiene departments, some hygiene patients rather, will say, I'd just rather go someplace else. And so, we find these patients that are fully restored and there's nothing left to do. Yeah, let's not call the next 10 and our last three employers, trying to trace them down and drag them in here.
Right.
We don't do that.
Yeah, unless they're going to be a marketing force for you.
But
yeah,
they don't.
That is true.
Some do, but most don't.
Yeah, most don't.
We find that people, it's just like Nordstrom learned a long time ago, that unless they keep changing things, keep improving things, and adding, you know, various things, their customers don't even talk about them. Les Schwab has learned the same thing. Their good customers don't even talk about them unless they're constantly changing things. And maybe that's why the colander in the photograph.
It's worked for us.
we can do an absolutely magnificent job, but people who come to us on a regular basis accept that as normal. They don't talk about it at all anymore. Which is why all of you track, you will find that your referrals do not come from your old people. I don't mean elderly as in old chronological. I mean people have been in your practice for a long time. They're not your referral sources. Majority of your referrals come with people that have been in your practice less than 6 months.
Right, and that's what when I track things, that's what that has been showing up as well.
We've done a lot of work with Kim on the 80-20 rule, and we start tracking where these people come from, and it's not the
hygiene,
it's not the established practice that so many people are promoting out there.
I think it's a fallacy for those individuals, other consultants that I've heard, that they say that you can get the big cases out of hygiene. I will say that's extremely rare. I haven't seen that in 10 years of practice.
Either they've done it or they're not going to.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask what is next for all of you. For those of you on the phone that are working with one of our enrollment consultants, please welcome their calls. If you're not, if you're interested in our coaching program at all, one of the things that will occur, somebody will give you a call in the next few days. If you're interested, fine. If you're not interested, just say so, and we won't bother you. We've learned a long time ago not to bug people if you're not interested. If you're interested or have more questions for Kim, you could email our office and get them to her. Or you can email, I'm going to say don't email Kim, she's very busy. If you email to me and I'll get them all to her at once.
Great.
Tomorrow morning we're doing Dr. Tom DeLopez, then everything is the same except the last code number is 09 rather than 08. I'm doing two more of these this month on various topics. But if any of you are interested in our coaching program, please welcome the call. Mustafa, welcome aboard. Mustafa just joined our program this week. I met him a few weeks ago up in Vancouver at an implant course. Dr. Evans from Vancouver also is, or one of her team members is actually on the call, I believe, tonight. And they have just come on board. Some of you are thinking, hopefully this made a difference for some of you. And if you're not interested in our coaching program, hopefully you learned something tonight will be useful to you. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a nice weekend.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.